Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm Melissa Howitson, CFO of Venice Solutions. On this podcast, we're going to dive into the ever-evolving role of finance teams and some of the topics that are shaping the future of the industry. For today, we have a really exciting topic and one that is revolutionizing the world of finance, and that is artificial intelligence, or AI for short. Over the past few years, the role of finance teams has moved beyond traditional fiscal responsibility. We are now leaning into helping drive innovation in our organizations, guiding through uncertain times, and helping to leverage technology to grow and move our businesses forward. Gartner predicts that 50% of organizations will be looking to replace their forecasting approaches with artificial intelligence in the future. Joining me today, we have someone with firsthand knowledge driving innovation, Rob Drover, VP Business Solutions with Markham Technologies. Rob, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great to be here today.
So Rob, let's lay some groundwork first. When you hear the term digital transformation, what does that mean to you?
I think, Melissa, digital transformation really means all about being prepared for future growth and having the systems, the technology, and the people to be able to adapt to all of the new market conditions that are hitting us every day. Consumers and clients and customers are demanding more immediate response, a higher quality response, and a more, adaptive reality. And they can't wait 2 weeks anymore to get a report or to get a product shipped or, to hear from you. They want to be able to hear from you immediately. They want to be able to interact and, buy things by credit cards and not traditional methods of payment. All those different things we've come to expect in a mobile generation. Our clients, our customers, everybody are demanding that. And our systems, legacy systems that are on-premise and so on that are difficult to transform, really impede our progress. So I think things like moving to cloud, coming up with unique and innovative ways to invoice and to transact and to pay bills and all those things, what I would determine is digital transformation.
Now, with the rapid advancements that we're seeing in AI, everyone's trying to make sure that they can stay ahead of the curve. What are you seeing as some of the key areas where AI is being used in terms of practical applications?
So I think a great example is accounts payable automation. It's an area that we've been struggling with for years because clients are reading manual invoices and transcribing and doing data entry, bank reconciliations, extracting data from credit card statements, all those types of the routine practices. People are starting to realize that they can't afford to put manual labor to it, and they need to come up with unique and innovative, AI-based solutions to accommodate for those.
And so when we think about why people are implementing some of these tools, and, when I think about it, I really think it's about trying to free our time up with automations and be able to do more value-added, thinking kind of tasks. What do you think is an ideal mix of time being spent between, say, the repetitive tasks versus those insights and thinking, value-added tasks?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. My non-scientific answer to that is that today we probably spend about 90% of our time trudging through the numbers, processing the transactions, and about 10% of the time actually analyzing and coming up with new strategies and plans and things for the future. And I think that if we could even possibly achieve a 70-30 ratio or even an 80-20 ratio, that's a 10% increase, that would make a tremendous impact on the quality of decisions that organizations make and their ability to adapt to new data and, make new decisions. So I think, again, we're at that very high end of the transactional scale, and just even small incremental improvements would, even if you could free up, 4 to 5 hours of someone's week, that would make a significant improvement in terms of the quality of the work they do.
And I absolutely couldn't agree more. I think focusing on those, even the small and incremental, because they can really add up. And I think that's where the magic is when people realize, hey, by doing this, I've saved this many hours a month on this task, which means I'm freeing that up for other things. All of those little wins can really start to add up. And I think it's important to celebrate them, whether they're big or small. One of the things I'm hearing a lot about is AI audits. And I think it might be something that some folks are just using to sort of kick us into gear in finance to say, are we on our game in terms of doing an AI audit of our technologies and where we're using AI, maybe where there's gaps, where we should go? Not sure if you're hearing that term used as much as well, but how should we in finance think about that in terms of that, how we're getting ready or assessing even the current state of our usage of AI?
If you look back at the early days of what we call, you know, called business process reengineering or BPR, that was probably back in what, the 80s and 90s. And it kind of died off as a fad. But I would argue that that activity should never have died off, right? We should be doing continuous improvement. So I think when consultants or others talk about AI audits, they're really talking about refocusing on, you know, process improvement, because again, that never goes away and should never go away. It should be continuous improvement. And then looking at what are the opportunities within your organization? And again, it could be a 2-hour improvement. It could be a 100-hour improvement. It could be a 1,000-hour improvement, but really starting to, you know, peel back the onion and uncover some significant opportunities for improvement, and then just getting stuff done, quite frankly, right? We talk about it a lot. We think about it a lot. We go to conferences and so on, but let's actually go back and make some implementation. You could start with something as simple as a macro, right? Again, been around for 30 years, all the way up to some advanced machine learning model or generative AI model. So the sky's the limit, but I think you have to start somewhere, and you have to find some people that are really have a vested interest and can sort of uncover the opportunities. So if audit's the term you want to use in order to spur growth or spur thinking, fine, or just we're going to have a process workshop or we're going to have a continuous improvement day, you know, anything to try to trigger people's ideas.
Yeah, I really like that, that vein of continuous improvement and the fact that this carries on regardless of what might be current technology, because I do think it's critical to just constantly be staying on top of what might be out there.
Exactly.
Now, I know for a lot of finance leaders, we're leaning in even more and more into automation and AI as ways that we're going to free up that time, like you said before, so that we can focus more on strategic goals and strategic priorities. Where have been some of the most common areas you've seen those automations work for finance teams that if people haven't really started, that you'd say they should be leaning into?
Payables, for example, anywhere where you're extracting data from documents, that's another big area. Repetitive, you know, things like interfaces between subledgers or third-party systems and your actual core financials. You shouldn't be rekeying anything, right? You shouldn't be transforming things and having to put things into spreadsheets and then take the spreadsheets and put them into the financials. So I think that's the key area is you look at the sort of subledger data and the detailed data that then goes into the financials. Anything you can do to automate that takes time away from everybody from the junior accountant all the way up to the CFO. And I think that's where we spend a tremendous amount of our time. It's the reason that a month end still takes 2 weeks for many organizations, right? When it really should take a couple of days in practice, right? If everything is fully tuned and automated and people get their stuff done and the data is right and the data quality is there, you know, you should be able to almost push a button in theory and close the books. But as we all know, you know, it can range anywhere from a few days to a few weeks sometimes. And that gives you no time to react and to get ready for the next month end. And then the cycle begins all over again.
Yeah, I often talk with my team about like, we can't be in perpetual close mode. And so it really is like a first foundational start to get the books closed as quickly with quality that we can, so that then we can start all of the rest of the work. So totally agree with that example. Now, when you think about the realm of automation, there's so many opportunities there, but there's also some pitfalls. What do you think of are some of the key challenges or areas that we should be thinking about of, you know, the downsides and mitigating those when it comes to AI and automation?
I'll kind of start at a high level and then I'll work my way down. I mean, I think as you get into some of these more advanced technologies out there, so again, if you took a machine learning model and it's making some sort of prediction, let's say it's going to predict your sales for the next quarter or the next, you know, annual, and you're going to then make decisions on that, whether that relates to staffing or investment or otherwise. You certainly want to test that model and make sure that in real life conditions and people who actually know the business very well have tested it, they've approved it, they've signed off on the kind of predictions that the model is making. Because obviously, if something's coded incorrectly, it will skew the model in the wrong direction, right? So I think that's critical. Another area, you know, businesses that do underwriting, where they're making decisions on mortgages or on life insurance or other qualifications. They want to make sure that that model is built very carefully and you understand the way it's been trained in order that it makes valid predictions and that it doesn't bias towards a certain population or, you know, certain income level where you really don't want that. But just the way it's been trained and programmed, it ends up disadvantaging a certain group of your customers. So I think that's very important. Understand how it was built, understand how it reacts. And then I think, you know, you have to look at things like privacy. You know, we've all seen these new models, ChatGPT and others that have hit the market very quickly. And they're asking you input information and we'll give you a result back. Well, I think organizations really need to ask, where does that information go when I enter it? What happens if my employee takes a client's tax return and uploads it, right? Where does that go? Yeah, you might get some interesting analysis back, but now is that information suddenly going to show up in someone else's query the next time they query the model? So looking at the privacy statements, who has access to the data? Is it a private model or a public model? I think all of those things are critically important.
Security, privacy, really key. And I also think, and you've touched on a little bit, like internal controls. And any thoughts there on how it needs to step up or evolve some of the way we think about even the internal controls around this?
Automation and AI in general does a pretty good job at what I'll call self-auditing, meaning that you can program, whether it's a robot or something else, to log in great detail the steps that it takes and transactions that it processes. And I think that's actually much better than when, you know, human labor works on a transaction because, you know, we struggle even to get our timesheets in sometimes, much less having to detail every single step we take in a day. So I think from that perspective, the auditing is actually strong. What I recommend is bring the internal audit folks or bring the folks that have that audit background into the program. Invite them in, explain how the technology works, and make them a key participant. And if they buy in and they understand the power of it, they can actually use that automation to do their own auditing work. So we've talked to internal auditors who would like to use automation in order to then look at more data and to be able to help uncover more challenges within the organization to help the ultimate goal of, you know, good, strong financials with a high quality. So I think it's actually a win-win. You get more detail. And if you can invite, you know, the audit-minded folks in, I think they can actually add a lot and they can gain from it themselves.
Yeah, I think that's great advice in terms of bringing folks in earlier. And you're right. In some ways, the controls get strengthened with this when people are freeing up time even to do more of the checking. But we've just got to be cognizant in reframing those controls to work in the new environment. Now, on another topic, when we think about digital transformation, it obviously sometimes means different skill sets, even within our own finance teams. And so as we think about helping to continue reskilling, upskilling our own finance teams, you know, what should finance individuals be thinking about when it comes to that?
First and foremost, I would say it's, you know, this is a broad term, but sort of data analytical skills, right? Being able to deal with high volumes of data, being able to transform that data, pivot that data, you know, to really come at it from a sort of a, I'm dealing with a high volume of information, how can I best sort through and slice and dice that, and then be able to recognize what tools are available to help you in that activity. So again, everything as simple as a pivot table in Excel, all the way up to a complicated analytical model, you know, that does regression analysis and predictive analytics and all these other things. But being able to sort of understand what those terms are, how they can be used practically in your job, and go out and just research and learn what's available and try things out. 10, 15 years ago, we had to take, you know, on-premise courses for thousands of dollars. Today, you can download a lot of these tools for free. You can use trial versions indefinitely. They have, you know, advanced universities where you can take hundreds of hours of courses on AI, machine learning. You know, there's so much available to us today. And I think people that are truly interested in upskilling and reskilling, you know, are going to be the ones that stand out.
And we've heard some groups starting to predict that in the future in finance, some of the skills that we're going to need will be a little less finance focused. And we may, in fact, be starting to bring in more coders, you know, folks that have been trained in analytics, et cetera. Curious, what are your thoughts when it comes to that? What does that future hiring look like?
I think we can take technically minded folks and provide them functional experience, and we can provide functionally minded folks and provide them technical experience. So even within our own firm, you know, we're starting to do things on the technology side that really cross over into accounting and finance. So we're doing things like sales and use tax compliance using robotics, run by the technology side of the business, but supported by the tax side, right? And so we're able to take on roles that traditionally maybe have not even been economically feasible for the firm. We can now do with robotics and automation and bring the tax folks in to do that higher level consulting, which is where they really want to focus. So I think there's that ability to blend between technology and functional experience, as long as, back to your question around auditing, that there are controls in place, that, you know, the people at least understand the basics and the fundamentals, and they're supported by people that have the strong functional skills.
So, Rob, you've given us lots of great things to think about today. If you had to boil that down to just two things you'd want our listeners to remember coming out of today, what would that be?
I think it's that that idea of continuous improvement, right? It wasn't a fad from the 90s. It's something that's going on today and will continue to go on. And then I think it starts small, but actually gets something done. So let's not just talk about it. Let's actually generate some projects. Let's set aside a few hours each week to work on them. And let's automate something and let's improve something. And lo and behold, it'll be like a snowball going downhill.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two questions that we like to ask them. Rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First one, what is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've received?
Don't ever be afraid to work yourself out of a job. And I say that not to be in this sort of the alarmist mode, but, you know, if you're a productive employee, if you're a productive leader, and you design a process that really eliminates a lot of non-value added work, you know, don't be afraid of what comes next, because you're going to be viewed as a very strong contributor and somebody who's going to move on to that next job and really do similar good work. So, you know, I've always been able to challenge myself to try to simplify, streamline, you know, quicker, better, faster. And that's sort of driven my whole philosophy around process improvement over my whole career.
Sometimes it'd be easy for people to feel threatened by the change, right? And so I think that's a great way to look at that and see it as it's an opportunity that's on the other side of that door when you get through that. Now, second question, what is something you do in your personal life that helps you be your best self in your work life?
Building something or taking a piece of complicated electronics. You know, my son and I have a 3D printer, and it's more about learning how 3D printers work and how the technology works and how it's so similar to an inkjet printer, but yet, you know, it's used in architecture. And so we're both learning architectural principles. But my point being that, you know, I then go out and learn and look at YouTube videos and download things and read stuff. And it just gives you that inquisitive nature, which I think in my line of work is extremely important, because every day there's a new technology hits the streets. And we can't be experts in everything, but we've got to be conversant and we've got to understand. So being able to go out and do that research and learn enough to be able to put all the puzzle pieces together and help your clients, you know, give them good advice.
Well, what a great way to close. And that'll do it for this episode of the CFO Show. If you'd like more information on this episode, please see the links in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcasts, because you don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.